The advice given on this show is for informational purposes only. It is not intended as investment advice. Please consult a financial advisor before undertaking any investment decisions. While the show's producers have tried to provide accurate and timely information and have relied on sources they believe to be reliable, the show may include inadvertent technical or factual inaccuracies. Jack Monteith and Ken Smith do not warrant the accuracy or completeness of the materials provided and expressly disclaim any warranties or merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose.
Good morning and welcome to Successful Investing with me, Jack Monteith, and my business partner, Ken Smith. This is a show that's going to help you build wealth, protect wealth, and to enjoy the fruits of your success. Ken and I have a combined 40 years of experience in the financial world. We're both owners in two wealth management firms, Empirical Wealth Management and Directional Financial Services. We're both certified financial planners. I'm a CPA and Ken has a master's degree in financial analysis. The point is, we're going to help you navigate through all the noise and endless investment choices to become successful investors. So please feel free to visit our website at www.directionalfs.com or call us at 877-262-9330 or contact us at directionalfs.com.
Also, Jack, I want to remind our listeners that they can subscribe to our monthly e-letter, which will have investment and financial planning topics. It's a free letter that just be automatically emailed to you once you subscribe. And also that you can check on our website for our seminars. And we'll be holding them in a variety of local markets. So check the schedule on that and sign up. We'd love to meet with you one-on-one, get an opportunity to meet with you and share a little bit about in a 1 to 2 hour format, share more information about our investment approach and how we can help you as advisors. And I think it may be to avoid confusion, Jack, we should take a moment and explain why we have two companies. You and I are partners of both of those firms. Directional Financial Services was created to service clients who have, starting with a minimum of $30,000 and then going up, while Empirical was created to service clients starting with a minimum of $1 million going up.
Well, Ken, you know, it's no secret that we have a passion for passive investing. And passive investing is in basically investing in and participating in the world economies. And to do that, we believe the best approach is through an index approach. An index is just basically a basket of stocks in a particular segment or part of the world, and you spread the risk. And we're big believers and have been pretty successful with that. But you and I were having a great conversation, and we thought, well, you know, it sure would be a good idea if we invited some of our more active listeners, active meaning maybe you've got a basket of stocks or 3 or 4 or 5 or 20 stocks that you're investing in, or you have an advisor who believes in picking individual stocks or individual bonds, and we'd love to have you call in and, you know, just share with us what your experience is or the advisor's experience is and what their belief system is, you know, why they believe the active approach is superior to the passive approach.
Yeah, I mean, we'd love to have an open discussion because obviously we've talked about the fact that we believe most investors, including ourselves, should be utilizing a structured asset class approach to investing. And what I mean by that is we're going out buying funds, not individual stocks. We're using funds because they're extremely cost-effective nowadays, and they provide the funds that we're using anyway, and I'd maybe retrace my steps on that statement. If you're selecting the right funds, they're extremely cost-effective, and they enable you to capture entire classes of stocks or securities. So we're using those asset class funds, a fund that'll hold, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 securities in it, given a particular fund we're speaking about, and we'll capture the entire class of large American companies, or an entire class of small American companies, or growth companies, value companies, rather than hire a mutual fund manager who is going to try to beat the index in those asset classes.
So we'd love to have you call in, or maybe your advisor, or if you've got you know, you're using a newsletter. If we could get one of those folks to call us, it'd be a lot of fun. I mean, we're not going to bite, and you know, maybe we can learn something. So again, contact us at, you can email us at contact@directionalfs.com. Directional is D-I-R-E-C-T-I-O-N-A-L. Or you can call us at 877-262-9330. Ken, I was reading your writing in our most recent newsletter, and I'm going to quote here because I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
You know, we use DFA as one of our funds that we use. That's a passive approach. And you refer and you state, quote, DFA has been able to add several percentage points of return over traditional benchmarks in many of their asset class funds. They have accomplished this by eliminating weaknesses found in both actively managed mutual funds and traditional index funds. So I'd like you to explain to us what some of those traditional weaknesses in the actively managed funds or traditional index funds.
Yeah, and maybe I'll start, Jack, just explaining DFA stands for Dimensional Fund Advisors. Explaining a little bit about the firm. The firm was started in 1981. They actually launched one of the very first microcap funds. And microcap just means they're buying stocks that are really tiny. So you have large companies. Typically, these are companies in the multi-billion, several hundred billion dollars of capitalization. And then you've got, you know, companies below a certain market into the small company category, and then microcap are those teeny tiny little companies out there. And so Dimensional Fund Advisors was started by a couple of academics and continues to be run by several prominent academics. Eugene Fama is heavily involved in the company. And Eugene Fama, in 1966, started doing research and wrote The Efficient Market Hypothesis, which is kind of the foundation to our investment strategy. So Dimensional Fund Advisors are out of Santa Monica, California. They're a mutual fund company we utilize quite a bit in building our client portfolios. The unique thing about them is they're passive. They don't like to be called index funds, and I think sometimes advisors and investors miscategorize them that way. And they do have some funds that are more index type, but what they're trying to do is really passively, in a passive way, meaning that they're not trying to outsmart the market, as we've spoken about on this show, by timing in and out or picking a handful of stocks or owning entire groups of stocks. But they're looking at, you know, what are the weaknesses in a traditional index fund, and can we eliminate some of those weaknesses? And so, you know, Dimensional can only be purchased through an advisor like ourselves. So, therefore, they can eliminate one weaknesses, which is the fickleness of the average retail investor who would be buying and selling, pulling money in and out of a particular mutual fund can create inefficiencies. Dimensional does a very rigorous screening process in who they allow to even use their funds. So advisors like us can use them. They're no-load mutual funds that have index-type expenses. But because of that, because they're a little more strict about it, they can be more efficient. The other way that they've been able to add some value over a traditional index fund is these academics looked at, well, how are indexes constituted or made up? And traditional funds that are trying to track, and let's use the S&P 500 as an example. You know, the S&P 500 is made up by a company that gets to pick what stocks they want to put in that index, and they do that, say it's on an annual basis. And then the mutual fund's tracking it to keep the what they call benchmark error in our industry, the deviation that a portfolio might have away from the index they're trying to track. They're trying to keep that as low as possible. So for the most part, they have to track along with what that index does. And when an index publishes that it will make, you know, remove a company from the index, typically that company will have some market impact effect. It'll drop because investors looking at it and going, well, this company is going to be taken out of the index. They're going to drive the price down. Companies, before they get put into the S&P 500 index, typically will go up. And I've read some academic research on, you know, how much, you know, on average these things go up or down. But
I've heard it's somewhere between 3 and 6%.
Yeah, yeah. And so there are some inefficiencies when you blindly track an index like that. And really, when you get into the small company indexes, that's where DFA has really built their reputation, you know, starting with that microcap fund. And then another Professor Fama was working with, Professor Eugene Fama, along with a guy by the name of Ken French, another professor from Dartmouth University. They were doing research on size and value effects. And so, you know, DFA, what's also unique about their company is a lot of the funds that they've created as a result of the academic work that they've done. And that's a little bit unique in the mutual fund industry, because a lot of mutual funds are created simply because they can be sold, not because they belong in investors' portfolios. I think that's something I want to make the point and caution investors. Just because it's out there and just because a big popular company created the fund doesn't necessarily mean there was a need for it, and especially doesn't mean that there's a need for it in your portfolio. So getting back to what are the weaknesses in the traditional indexes, well, you know, when you get into these small company indexes, like say the Russell 2000, you know, what happens is when you start moving stocks in and out because they're being dropped out of that index, you have a very wide bid-ask spread in the really tiny companies. And what that is, a bid price, Jack, is the price when you go to sell your stock, the price that the market maker or specialist will give you. And the ask price is what you pay.
So you'll always pay more than what you would sell in at that particular moment.
Exactly. What's in between is what that market maker gets for taking the risk of creating a market and providing liquidity in that particular stock. Well-known companies like Microsoft have really tiny bid-ask spreads. Differences between buy and sell are really tiny. But when you get into these really illiquid stocks that are smaller companies, it can be, you know, anywhere between 1 to 10% spreads.
And that's because there's just not a whole lot of shares trading at any one point in time.
That's right. And it's also because, not only that, there might not be a whole lot of what's called float out there, a lot of trades. So it doesn't take a whole lot of volume to make up a very large percentage of what stocks are available out there.
And that's very interesting. That's one of the problems that active managers of small cap mutual funds run into. As they get more and more successful, it's more and more difficult for them to buy small stocks.
That's right. And the Fidelity Magellan Fund we've mentioned on the show is an example. That started off, you know, Peter Lynch was out there buying a handful of stocks, and he could focus on even owning several small company type of stocks. But as more and more money got poured into the fund, as he was successful, the fund, because of legal limits on what percentage of a company a particular mutual fund can own, they have to go out and keep expanding their universe. So they have to buy more and more stocks till eventually the fund looked like a very expensive S&P 500.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, I've heard that most of the performance came from that Magellan Fund while they were buying small companies.
That's right. And if we look at the research and we say that small caps do better than large caps and value companies do better than growth companies, some of the good performance that Peter Lynch and Warren Buffett and those guys have had, you'd have to attribute to the fact of where are they investing, you know.
Right.
So getting back to the index weaknesses, is that bid-ask spread when you're forced to trade a lot because of an index is making frequent reconstitution, and why would it change the stocks in the index? I mean, we pause there for a sec, Jack. Well, when companies get too big, they need to be moved out of the index. If they get too small, then they get taken out of the index. If a company is going through financial troubles or things like that, they might move them out of the index as well. So depending on what type of index you're looking at, there are different reasons why that index will change over time. So as that happens in that small company sector, if you are a mutual fund who has to blindly follow what the index is doing, you may be forced to make trades that, one, that the bit you'll lose money to that bid-ask spread, And then the other place you could lose money is, as an example, is the market, what's called market impact costs. When you buy, like we were just saying, you buy a lot of a stock that's very, has a very low volume or very thinly traded, as they call it, you can, your purchases or sales can move that stock substantially. And so when you're managing large amounts of money in an index fund, and you've got to get out of a stock, it can drive the prices. Just your you selling that fund alone can drive the price of a stock down. Well, Dimensional looks, you know, in their academic research, they divide up the marketplace a little differently. And they say, hey, we don't have to be slavish to a who said that Russell or S&P were the had the market on what constitutes a small company or a large company, right? So they're dividing up the market, and they're looking at, well, the average capitalization in our small cap fund in the Dimensional is much smaller than that of the Russell 2000. So you get another benefit there with the Dimensional fund, which is if returns are coming from small companies, you get a higher rate of return. You take on more risk, but if you really do get a higher rate of return, then you want to capture that, you know, those small companies as pure as possible. You don't want to have mid-size or large companies in there. And then what DFA says is, well, you know, we don't believe we can outperform the market. We just want to capture these small companies. So they'll own, you know, again, over 1,000 small companies in their small cap fund. But they're not going to be forced to trade out of a company simply because some independent index provider dropped it out of the index. And so if a company becomes too large, you know, they have no problem waiting a year or two to get out of it slowly so that they don't lose money to those market and trading impact costs. And they've done a very good job of that. And, you know, in the letter I point out some of the funds that have been around for 10 years that they have that have added a pretty nice additional return over a traditional index. They're still passive, which meets our criteria. They're still very diversified.
Ken, it's pretty clear that you're a big fan of DFA, but I want to make it also very clear that we are completely independent as advisors. We have no financial connection to DFA whatsoever. We receive no commissions. So it's just, you know, we have a passion to go where it's best for our clients, and certainly DFA is one of the sources that we use.
That's right. I mean, we're always looking, and part of the research and part of the reason clients hire us is we're doing continual research on what's out there. I mean, there's literally thousands of ETFs and index funds now available, and they're rolling out every day.
So at this time, I'd like to remind our listeners, you know, contact us if you got questions, you want to challenge some of our thoughts. I mean, we'd love to hear from you. So email us at contact@directionalfs.com or call us at 877-262-9330.
And Jack, I'd like to ask you a question.
Oh,
that we every week we've been trying.
Put me on the spot.
Yeah, let's put you on the spot. You know, we've been taking listener and client questions. And, you know, one question that pops up frequently, not just recently, but frequently, is, you know, a client owns a large amount of a single stock or, say, a single mutual fund, or maybe a tiny handful of stocks. And, you know, here we are talking about being tax efficient. I mean, that's one of the big things, and you being a CPA, I mean, that's
right.
That's your gig, right?
Right.
I mean, keeping the taxes down, and but at the same time, we're preaching and talking about being diversified,
right?
And so I think this is the dilemma. I mean, the question is, you know, when someone owns a small number of stocks, a mutual fund or an individual stock that they purchased at a very low price a long time ago.
Right.
And so, you know, now they're listening to us and they're saying, hey, I realize I'm taking on a lot of financial risk because, you know, I'm taking on that unsystematic risk that's, you know, you take on when by owning one company. And that basically means that, hey, any one company could go to zero, right? It's very possible. It's pretty difficult to expect the entire market to do that. So now they agree, and we've converted them, that I need to be diversified. I need to be in asset class funds. But what do you recommend? I mean, how do they get out of this thing?
Well, that's the old letting the tax tail wave the investment dog question. And interestingly, I recently had a client with a situation very similar to that brought in a large position of Google. And at the time, Google was about $600 a share. So, I mean, and I'll get back to the example. There's basically two ways that investors, us as investors, can pay a tax. You can pay it to, you know, to the IRS, or you can let the markets pay it for you. And here's an example of letting the markets pay it for you.
Yeah.
This client came in and large position of Google. You know, smart client, so I was able to convince the client, you know, let's take some of this diversification risk away, or concentration risk. You know, you got way too much of your net worth tied up in one stock. Let's take it away, diversify. We were able to sell quite a bit of Google at about $600. You know, stock, as you would, you know, luck would have it, almost immediately went to $700. And a client was smart and held the course. And, you know, today I looked at Google up, it's at about $449. So that client could have paid the tax, which they elected to do when the Google was at $600, by selling. Uh-huh. You know, we've got tax rates that are literally as low as they've been, maybe some people argue ever, as far as capital gains goes. I think there was a period in the time in the 20s where it was as low or maybe a little lower, but take the opportunity, 15%, or you could have let the markets taxed you by letting your position drop from $600 to $449. Well, you know, I don't know what that's a 25% tax.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's not a stock out there that can't drop 50% or more overnight. I mean, look at Bear Stearns.
Right.
You know, so the point is, don't let the tax tail wag the dog of the investment. And so we're big believers on that. You know, another, Ken, as in our firm, we technique that we use to manage tax. Now, even though this client had to pay, you know, had a large capital gain at a sale price of $600, we use a technique called farming losses.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically, you know, with a very diversified portfolio through the entire world, such as we use for our clients, you're always going to have parts of the world that their markets are going up and other parts are going down. Now, we as investors use that opportunity to, you know, basically sell high and buy low by rebalancing. But when we rebalance, or we have the ability, then if some sector of the economy has dropped, we sell that as a loss. Because we're using a passive approach, we can easily replace that asset class with a very similar asset class and recognize that loss, or farm that loss and offset it against gains, such as the Google situation. We don't have the 31-day wait and hold situation, whereas if you are buying individual stocks, you can't and you sell it at a loss, you can't replace it within 31 days. So right now, in current laws, passive, we can go back, and as long as we buy that asset class, we're not going to go back and buy the exact same position, but
right,
farming losses.
I agree. I mean, most investors, and we do this actively for our clients year-round, most investors are not taking advantage of the tax code. And something I want to bring up, Jack, when you're looking at that Google, is there a difference between the long-term and short-term capital gains rates, and what time frame those are?
Yeah, that's a great point, Ken. Long-term are subject to 15% on the federal, and the holding period is 1 year. Anything less than that is short-term gain, and that's basically taxed at your ordinary tax rate. So if you're in a 35% tax rate, that's what you're going to pay taxes on. Now, there's some combining with losses, but if you have a net short-term gain, you're going to be taxed at your ordinary rates.
And Jack, real quick, just to put that in perspective, at one time, wasn't the hold time longer and the rate higher? I mean, wasn't capital gains long-term, even long-term, in the 28% range?
Yeah. It wasn't too long ago that long-term capital gain rates were 28%. And even before that, I remember you could exclude 60% of the gain and only pay 40% tax on 40% of the gain, but, you know, tax rates were up almost to 70%.
Yeah.
So we're really in a unique situation, and, you know, I'd love for our listeners to raise their hand right now if they think that the tax rates are going to stay the same or even decrease from this point going forward. So if you're looking to diversify, you definitely you want to think about this year. There's some great opportunities now, even with zero capital gains in 2008.
I mean, we can pick this up on our next show.
Yeah. Well, Ken, let's see. We're about ready to close this show. I want to remind our listeners, if you've got questions or ideas, again, or challenges, I mean, please, you can visit our website at www.directionalfs.com or email us at contact@directionalfs.com or call us at 877-262-9330. I want to get a plug in. We've got a guest speaker next week that's just on a very, very touchy topic, and I've run into it quite a bit. You know, if you're retiring early, and early is before Medicare kicks in, the real problem is how do you provide for medical insurance?
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about that.
So our next guest speaker, you know, be sure to join us next
Peter
week.
Peter Gerlitz, yeah.
Yeah, just an expert in the medical insurance, and he's going to help us cover that shortcoming between retirement and Medicare.
Also at that number, 1-877-262-9330, you can reach us at Empirical. We're just using the same company for the show, but you can get to us for Empirical or Directional.
And good morning, and see you next week.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
The advice given on this show is for informational purposes only. It is not intended as investment advice. Please consult a financial advisor before undertaking any investment decisions. While the show's producers have tried to provide accurate and timely information and have relied on sources they believe to be reliable, the show may include inadvertent technical or factual inaccuracies. Jack Monteith and Ken Smith do not warrant the accuracy or completeness of the materials provided and expressly disclaim any warranties or merchantability or fitness for a particular purpose.